This podcast is sponsored by Low No Drinker magazine, the number one UK magazine for the sober, curious drinker, bringing you news, reviews and interviews from the people, places and brands leading the low and no alcohol revolution. As a Sober Rebel listener, use code SOBERREBEL15 to get 15% off any digital or print subscription from the Low No Drinker magazine for 6 whole months. Hello and welcome to the Sober Rebel podcast, where I talk to my guests about the joys they've experienced in sobriety, the doors that have opened up for them, the things that they're doing that they never thought they would have as a drinker. And today I'm talking to Diane, who is just about to approach her 6 month sober anniversary. Diane, how are you?
I am marvellous, thank you. I think people are getting a little bit cheesed off when they say, how are you today? They're bloody marvellous, how are you?
And then do you tell them what you've done?
It depends who it is, to be honest with you. Mostly my stock answer is I go to the gym a lot and I release happy endorphins. I'm trying to quieten myself down a little bit because something happened at the weekend concerning a dessert. And I was quite outraged that somebody would just pour booze on my chocolate sphere without asking me. My husband protested. And when I said, what have you just poured over my dessert? They said, oh, caramel. And I looked it up. I said, that's not caramel. So they took it away and someone came over to investigate. Turns out it was 90% alcohol that they were pouring over my dessert. I was really outraged. And I said, look, if that had peanuts in it, you'd put it on the menu. So you should really give people the heads up that that's what you're going to do. Not that I'm allergic, but I suppose I kind of am. But what shocked me was my reaction to it. I was really quite cheesed off. I'm putting it mildly because I'm determined not to swear. Really cheesed off. But my son said, Mum, you have made yourself different. You're standing out from the crowd and you need to be careful that you don't go over the top with your getting in a huff about booze.
Although when it's put on your plate, I think it's right, actually, that some of these places do have that, you know, just let them think about it.
It's an assumption. And I think that's because everybody does it. Everybody, yeah. Especially if you're British. So I was in Merthyr quite recently and I went to the local spa and lo and behold, they had some zero alcohol Tanqueray. And I'm learning Spanish, and so I can just about get by. And I asked for the bottle of Tanqueray with zero. So she went to get the full strength. No, left a bit. So she pulled the bottle off the side, blew the dust off it, and she pointed at the zero sign. It's zero. And I said, I know, I don't drink. And she went, really? And then we went on to have a conversation about the ills of alcohol and the benefits of exercise and that sort of thing. But because I'm English, she just assumed I was making a mistake. I wanted booze.
Goodness.
Yeah.
Okay, well done for speaking in Spanish as well.
Oh, I'm getting there. My son laughs at me with some of my literal translations. I can't tell you what they are because they're rude. But but I'm enjoying it, and one of the benefits, and it's a small benefit, is that in the evenings I'm not tucking into an alcoholic beverage. I'm tucking into Duolingo and learning how the cow is washing the pig's ears and very useful phrases like that. But
because we all need those phrases, don't we?
I'm sure at some point they might come in handy if I go and live on a farm in Spain. Who knows?
Never know. You never know. So just share with everybody a little bit about your sober journey. Okay. How long have you been sober?
6 months.
Congratulations.
Thank you. It's been a long time coming. So I've given this a great deal of thought as to where, you know, what happened. There was no event that set me on my path as a boozer. It started when I was about 14 years old. I was hanging around with some naughty girls and we used to get people to go and buy booze for us, you know, and then hang around in the cemetery as you do, drinking cider. It was what you did. And then I was raised in pubs. I was raised by my grandparents, and they always had pubs. So I was surrounded by it. It was normal. And then not a heavy drinker in my late teens. I didn't do the whole club scene because I got married like an idiot. I just turned 17. It was just life. Booze was generally there, but didn't have much money. But as you get older and you get a job and you have more disposable income, then you can buy more things for the kitchen, including booze. And then I embarked upon a career in the law many years ago, and it had a heavy drinking culture. We worked hard, and by goodness, we played hard too. We thought nothing of stopping at lunchtime and going down to the local wine bar and having two large glasses of wine, sometimes three. And it just, you know, the more you drink, the higher your tolerance goes, you know, all this. And I didn't perceive that it was a problem. I think my family perceived that it was a problem a lot sooner than I did. And I suppose when I truly started to question it was about pandemic, lockdown, booze. My recollections of lockdown are quite hazy because they were an alcohol fug, really. Very, very low, very depressed. And I loved to travel. And as soon as I could, a then girlfriend said to me, "Shall we have a trip away?" So I don't do anything by halves, and said, "Well, shall we go to Venice? Because I love Venice." "Yes." And off we go, and we're upgraded to this fabulous place. I did not realise that I was going away for a few days with an alcoholic. And alarm bells should have sounded when I saw her buying cooking wine for the room. You know, great big litre cartons of wine at €2.50. I bought a bottle of gin or something for the room. You know, you'd have a little drink while you're getting ready before you go out in the evening. But she never came to breakfast, and that's because I suspect she was in the room drinking. It wasn't a great time for me because a drunk person isn't good company. And whilst I realised I drank every day, I drank, I suppose, to a teetotaler, they'd say she was a heavy drinker. In my mind, I drank normally. I didn't realise that day drinking wasn't normal, not on a working day, but a weekend or a holiday, whatever, day drinking, that's normal. Everyone does that, right? So 6 days in Venice with this lady, and I it made me uncomfortable. And when I came home, I thought, I need to look at my own relationship with alcohol. And that's when I started reading Quit Lit. I think I had a week off after Venice. I had a whole week off. Woohoo! And then back to my old ways. And then I was stop-starting. And you know that feeling when you wake up and you think, oh, blimey, I've done it again. I drank a bottle of wine last night. I don't feel very sharp. But it didn't stop me from going to the gym or working. It just took my engines a little bit longer to start firing on all six cylinders. And it was a stop-start thing until the back end of last year. I think I'd done 2 months out of 2 months off. And then I went to some Christmas do, you know, late November. Had too much to drink because I hadn't been drinking. But my friends went, "Oh, go on. You can have one, can't you?" "Oh, all right then." But one was never one. With me, I didn't have that sort of off switch. Once I had one, I thought, "Oh, I quite like that. Here we go again." And I woke up the next morning after this to-do and thought, "Oh, you idiot." So I didn't drink right the way through till Christmas. Christmas Eve, we went to our favourite restaurant. I drove, and I even journaled that evening and said how proud I was of myself. And then on Christmas Day, bang, I found myself opening a bottle of sherry, as you do because it's Christmas morning. Emphasize the word morning, because that's okay, because it's Christmas Day.
You know, I used to open a bottle of Prosecco and pour it, and while I'm doing the vegetables and everything, it's
And
just...
you've got the carols going in the background. It's just... And actually, Christmas Day wasn't brilliant because I ended up being upset. Because we all know that alcohol is, it truly is. If you want to get depressed or you want to feel blue, drink enough and it'll come. You know, you'll feel tired and emotional at some stage. And I did. And so the next day, again, berating myself, you idiot, what did you do that for? I had a little look. What can I read next or listen to next in this case? And of course, I came across a book called Becoming a Sober Rebel.
Sounds like a good book.
Well, it must be all right. I've read it or listened to it about seven times.
Have you? My goodness.
I promise you. And I can remember lying on my bed listening, thinking, oh, I identify with that. Yeah, that lady sounds a little bit like me. You know, I didn't have a rock bottom moment. I just had had enough. It was time to retire from a very long career in drinking. And I have. On all the previous times that I have attempted sobriety, it has been a white knuckle experience. And something that I'm doing because I think that I should, but not something I really wanted to do because I thought I liked it. And, you know, watching somebody else take a drink, I would think, oh, I wish I could have one of those. It was feeling that I was missing out. Something flicked when I read your book and sought help, that now I look at anybody drinking and think, oh, you poor soul. Because I believed the lie that was sold to us for so, so many years. And now I've become cognizant. And that's the difference for me. I've as you know, Louisa, I think too deeply about lots of things. And this is what I've come to the conclusion is now that I understand, something was set alight in me that I needed to know more. And I think you've discussed, you're much the same. If something catches your interest, well, then you'll research it. Egyptology caught my interest. So not content with visiting the country and looking at the temples. Well, no, of course, that's not enough for Diane. Let's sign up for, I think it was Exeter University online course in Egyptology.
Yeah.
Because that's what you do, right?
It's certainly what we do.
In serious attempts, I would say it's taken me 3 years to get where I am. A lot of stopping and starting and resetting to day one and that sort of thing. And I'm here. And I know you say confident, not complacent. Well, I'm confident and I'm actually bloody smug. Because
yeah.
I love the way I feel. There's no turning back for me now. I wouldn't trade the way I feel now for a sniff of an espresso martini.
And it shows that it isn't that kind of linear. It wasn't linear for me. It wasn't right. I can't do this anymore enough. It was, oh, I just feel rubbish all the time. I've got to admit to myself, and this was something I was thinking today, if somebody could sit there and just be honest with themselves about one thing, you know, just sit there and say, look, I'm going to have an honest conversation with myself about how I feel about alcohol. Don't need to tell anybody else. I don't need to announce it. I could just sit there either with a pen and paper or record a video of yourself like I did. You don't have to share it on Instagram like I did, but just record a video that you can watch back, because it's in being honest with yourself that that will start the process. And then it's about learning. It's like about, like you say, throwing yourself into it, isn't it?
Oh, without a doubt. I immersed myself in reading and not just people's stories. Everybody's story, everybody's path is different. I get that. And I think it's really important, really, really important to find, well, find your tribe. It's much used, isn't it? But find your tribe, find somebody that you can identify with. So much has changed for me in my confident everything. And I remember to brush my teeth every night. I've always been two or three times a day, but of course, when you're sloshed or tired, you don't always remember.
That's a little win, isn't it? That's absolutely true. It's just I'm remembering now the amount of times that I would have just forgotten.
Well, crumbs make a cake, right? So it's lots of little things that add up to something quite big.
I've never heard that before. Crumbs make a cake. I love it.
Oh, well, that's I can attribute that to Jack Banton. He'll tell me off. He'll say, you pinch that from me and it's true.
Tiny pieces build up to make the whole picture, don't they?
They build up to make a happy person. I didn't realise how unhappy I was with myself. Not with anything particularly externally. And that's another thing that's come from sobriety, I suppose, is that, you know what, that Diane person, she's actually quite nice. And now that I'm sober, I'm even nicer. I have more tolerance. My knee doesn't come up quite so quickly, you know, as in I don't lose my rag so quickly. Yeah, I'm a calmer, happier, smug person.
So what's your first positive of sobriety then?
Freedom. And it's really hard to just pick three because the list is infinite. So I've narrowed it down to freedom and two others, of course. And I've really come up with, I've escaped from the treadmill, the roundabout, whatever you want to call it. I've escaped from the herd of following the crowd. You know, it's Friday, let's have a few. It's Saturday, let's have a few more. It's Sunday, oh crap, we've got work tomorrow. Oh well, let's open a bottle. Don't feel the need to do that anymore. Freedom of thought, clarity. And can I put bravery under the same heading?
Yeah.
As I mentioned earlier, I like to travel, and my traveling is getting on an aeroplane. And I noticed going back a while that I developed anxiety surrounding flying. I don't know where it came from, but you know, this alcohol myth, that it relieves stress, it sorts out your anxiety. It doesn't, of course. It multiplies it. And where it sneaks under the radar, before you know it, it's on you. And that's alcohol. And I can remember I was flying to Dublin and I was crying as we took off because I was just having a moment. I was frightened. And when we leveled off, the cabin crew went off and gave me a large brandy to settle me down. And I thought, blimey, when you look back on that, now I look forward to going to the airport, not because I can have a drink at 7 o'clock in the morning, which I never did, by the way, but because I know I'm going to get on that big shiny thing and it's going to take me somewhere exciting. And I've even flown a few times on my own. And not a tear in fact, I think I've sent you a couple of selfies. I'm on an aeroplane, I'm smiling, and look, I've got a Diet Coke in front of me. Yeah, so I'll fly, and this trip, I was on mainland Spain, as I mentioned. I hired a car, I'd never driven in mainland Spain before, and got my car, and off I went.
Well, that must have been an experience, driving in Spain.
I didn't hit anybody. It was all good. It was a win. I managed to, it's sort of a 35, 40 minute drive to my friend's place. And I got from A to B, no problem whatsoever.
Would you have hired a car like that? Would you have travelled? You would have travelled on your own as a drinker. You didn't have anxiety to that level.
I did have anxiety, but our son lives in Barcelona and I've flown out there twice on my own. But that was, I was loaded. as in I'd had two or three G&Ts before we took off.
That anxiety really did impact this thing that you love, this traveling that you love to do on your own and with your husband.
I became really fearful. And one thing that the alcohol did for me, I think it shrunk my world. I wasn't bothered about going out. I've always had myself down as a bit of a party animal. I didn't really want to do that. I just wanted to stay at home, watch Netflix, and have a drink until it was time to go to bed.
Isn't it a sort of contradiction, really, that alcohol is sold to us as this social thing that, go out and party. But often you talk to people and, they needn't even be massively heavy drinkers. But a lot of people just say they don't have the energy, the time. Maybe they developed some social anxiety around it, or like you with your flying, it's made your world smaller.
And now that there are no, my next trip, sorry, our next trip is Greece in August. And we've been to this particular resort 3 times before, but not for a few years. Wonderful place. But we, apart from going to two main towns, that's all we ever did because we were quite happy to stay in resort, sun ourselves, and pickle our livers. And already I've been looking at car hire companies so that I said, well, we're going to get a car and there's this archaeological site I'd quite like to go, which is on the other side of the island. And there might have, be a few mountain roads, but hey, I'm sure I can manage that. If somebody had suggested I did that 4 years ago, the last time we were there, I'd just laughed at them. I said, I'm not doing that. Because number one, I was never a drink driver, and I was always very mindful the next day about when was the last time I drank, how many hours have passed. As somebody that used to fly planes once said to me, 8 hours, bottle to throttle. Which actually, when I think about it, is stuff and nonsense because it depends how much you've drunk, what you weigh, what your propensity is to get rid of the alcohol that's in your system. And I just wouldn't have wanted to hire a car because that would have interfered with how much I was going to drink the day before in the evening. Because I used to be partial to a cocktail or three or four or five. I saw a card once, it was one tequila, two tequila, three tequila floor. That was about the size of it. Stop when you drop. And no, I wouldn't have done that. And now I'm really looking forward to it. Not sure my husband's embracing the idea. No, I think that's one of, if not, yeah, one of the main things that I'm super, super happy about is that I've made my family proud of me. They're always pretty proud of my achievements, going through my life, but this one in particular. And again, my son said to me quite recently, he said, I am so proud of you, Mum. And I was talking about being away quite recently, and I exited the party because I could see that the conversation was going south. And I said to Jack, I was lying in bed realizing my shoulders were up. I was tense, and I had to put on a meditation. And that's what I did. And that has been a massive change. Don't get me wrong, if you're a vegetarian, don't give meat eaters a hard time. I've chosen this path, lucky me, and I no longer take on board alcohol. But if you want to do that, be my guest. But please don't get trolleyed with me because I won't appreciate it. You'll put me on edge and I will leave. And self-care, just look after yourself because,
I always find when I'm out in company, first couple of drinks, everybody's a delight. Everybody's having a laugh. It's actually, that's the point. If you're going to have any thoughts about, oh, that's when it would happen, stick with it until drink three, and you start to see the whole atmosphere change.
It did on this occasion I'm recalling. And but the other thing that happened, so I've met this chap and he met me, it took about 10 minutes, and my friend announced that Diane doesn't drink. And the lady said, well, what are you drinking then? I said, a gin and tonic, but it's a zero alcohol gin. She said, well, can I smell it? I said, have a taste. Oh, she said, it tastes good. So her husband looked at me and said, well, I've got a question for you. Why don't you drink? I said, well, back at you, why do you drink? And he went, I don't really know. I said, well, perhaps that's the question you should be addressing rather than asking a total stranger why she doesn't drink. Just feel as if I've had these shackles taken off my ankles and my hands. And now, as I said earlier, when I see somebody drinking alcohol, it wouldn't cross my mind that I want one. And I think I mentioned to you a little while ago, my first holiday was on the horizon. It would be my first holiday as a sober person. And I was really nervous. I even started having those dreams where you're drinking in your dream and then you wake up and you think, oh, did I do that? Did I do that? Am I back to day one? No, I didn't. And sailed through it and had a great time. I laughed so hard at so many silly things. Hired a car, because my husband had a problem with his foot. And I said, well, we're going to be stranded in this villa. Let's get a car. And I can remember every day of my holiday. That's a first because all my preceding holidays have been quite hazy. I only remember them because I journal. I write down in my journal what I've done that day. So if I want to remember a holiday, I'll go back and have a little read of that particular journal.
That's amazing that you enjoyed a holiday you were present for, because I know a lot of people are really, really naturally nervous. I was nervous about a holiday. Somewhere in about the third day, I thought, this is daft. I'm just going to enjoy this. I'm really going to embrace it. I'm going to start to get up early. I'm going to walk to the bakery, and I'm going to do all these different things that I haven't done before. And that's when something clicks, isn't it?
The very, very first, the day we landed, we went to Mallorca and we were at a place which had a small port, marina, and we dumped our cases and we headed off for a spotted lunch and everyone was ordering drinks and the sun's shining, I can hear the masts of the yachts tinkering away and it was perfect setting and a millisecond, and I mean a millisecond as somebody ordered a large glass of white wine. And I just looked and thought, no. The waiter came along, Diet Coke, please. And that was a millisecond. And there was another millisecond when a strawberry daiquiri was being drunk in front of me. And I thought, oh, that looks nice. But not because it was alcohol. It looked like a blooming great big strawberry ice cream. And I had a virgin creamy something or other, which was very, very nice. Anyway, the kids in their 30s, they got in at 4 o'clock that morning. My husband had had a few. Now, bear in mind, he'd been dry for a number of months. And in the morning, I got up, put my trainers on, and I think I went out for a walk as the sun was coming up. Got back to the villa. Well, the kids got up at 1:45 in the afternoon. My husband denied having a hangover. I think he was fibbing. And it amused me, actually. It just amused me. And obviously Murphy was my second time. And it's normal. And I know I've heard people say on your podcast that it's tough, it's this, it's that. And I suppose I'm very fortunate because I haven't found it tough. It's decision made now, no going back. If I'm allowed to, my top tip, and I think this has been really pivotal for me, is that listen to the book. And then I was really, really brave and I asked for help. I think this is the problem. Good Lord, I'm a determined person. Whatever I want to do, and if I can't do it, we'll get on to yoga if you like. If I can't do it or I don't feel that I can excel at something, I won't really bother. So I asked for help and I had a few sessions with your good self. And it sounds really dramatic, but it's been life-changing. Absolutely life-changing. And if I dwell on that too much, I'll get all soppy and teary. So I'll try not to. because I'm so bloody grateful. I'm so grateful. And I know at the end of the day, I'm paddling my own canoe.
You
I'm
are.
in charge of this vessel. But with a little bit of help, do you remember I used to call you my golly golly? It's my golly golly, as in you're my protective blanket. Okay, so I know you there and I'll grab you if I feel that I'm wavering. And now I probably just grab you because I want to tell you that's what happened.
It's been an honor to support you. It really has, because and to see you thrive and glow and enjoy holidays, because I know that was a really big thing for you. You love your holidays.
I was bricking it. I
Yeah,
was bricking
I know
it
you were.
because I thought if anything is going to knock me off balance, it's going to be a holiday
Yeah.
for whatever reason. Because it's past behaviour. My neurological pathways were so well trodden. Holiday equals getting, you complete this, can you? Shit-faced. The lady that owns the restaurant that I go to now and again. And because I have got a rather raucous laugh, and she laughs, and she walked by me quite recently, and she said, "You don't need a drink, do you?" And I, "No, I don't." Alcohol creates a prison, you know. It creates a prison, and you build it yourself, brick by brick, glass by glass, and before you know it, it's so pervasive, it just slips, and you're making your own prison with every glass that you take, and before you know. You've sealed the door and you feel like there's no way out. I gave that door a good old boot. I'm out and I'm not getting back into that cage. Simple.
Yeah.
So yeah, freedom.
So what's your second thing?
I've got to say health, haven't I?
Well, you look the picture of health.
I've got some stats for you because I know you like them.
Oh, I love a stat. Come on then.
And only three stats. Heart rate. My resting heart rate was 80 plus on average, 83 to 86 on average. My current resting heart rate is, drum roll please, 50.
Wow, that is
I know.
amazing.
Hand to God, 50. That's quite a worrying stat, isn't it?
I don't think heart rate was something I ever worried about as a drinker.
No, I didn't either.
I would worry about my liver, and that was about it, really, because it's the liver that gets all the press. But my heart rate dropped 10 beats a minute, and I thought that was pretty impressive. But that is phenomenal. So your heart is working less hard.
No, sometimes it drops to 48, and I actually think, bloody hell, am I about to die? Blimey. Sleep. I think people underestimate the effect that alcohol has on your sleep. Booze is bad. So now, and you know, I measure everything with my gadgets. I'm now averaging 8 hours every night.
Yeah.
From 5 hours. 5 hours tossing and turning. And now it's a good 8 hours. Unless the cockapoo has other ideas.
I was listening to a Arongan Chatterjee podcast. It was Matthew Walker
The
talking
sleep
about
guy.
sleep. Yeah. And I think we really do underestimate sleep. In that podcast I listened to, it really highlighted to me how important it is, a lack of sleep. And they said that one of the best bits of data we've got is daylight saving time when the clocks go forward and clocks go back. And again, rough approximations here because I can't remember the figures, but they said when we lose an hour overnight, there is a 20% increase in heart attacks. When we gain an hour a night, that night, there's a 20% reduction in heart attacks. And that, again, rough approximation figures, but that made me think, goodness me, the data is there about sleep, isn't it? And alcohol does rob you of your sleep. You think you're asleep, but you're not asleep, you're drugged.
Which it begs the question why the government aren't doing more to educate about alcohol and the lousy effects that it has on people. And, you know, I think the tide is turning. in attitude, especially coming from the younger folk. But I think, unfortunately, the government make too much money from tax and alcohol, and are not so keen to tell us. If you want to know something, you've got to do the work and you've got to look into it yourself. And one of the non-story books I read was recommended by you, actually, Professor Nut Drink. Read it. It's shocking. Absolutely shocking. And I think it's bordering on criminal that people aren't made aware. I have to see a consultant every 6 months because I had a diagnosis in my left boob. I put the brakes on when they decided they wanted to take part of my anatomy away just in case. I said, no thanks. Let's monitor this. And I went quite recently. Now, bear in mind, this lady cuts people's parts off for a living. She's a surgeon. And she said, well, Mrs. Banton, how are you? And I said, yeah, I'm really, really good. And she said, well, how are your boobs looking? I said, you know, they're heading south. She went, oh, well, normal then. And how's everything else? I said, well, I'm alcohol free. I'm still alcohol free. And there was this change in energy in the room. And she said, oh, well, you'll have noticed from the stony silence. I said, well, that you drink. She said, yes, we drink. I said, you've got any idea how bad that is for you? She said, well, I've got to, I don't care how bad it is for me. She said, I've got to have my vices. And I thought, wow, you treat women that have had a breast cancer diagnosis and booze, correct me if I've got this wrong, Louisa, but I'm pretty sure that alcohol is linked to at least seven cancers. I find it shocking. It's a bit like watching a drama. I watch This Is England, I think, with Kenneth Branagh, all about the pandemic. And I looked at my husband and I said, if I hadn't have lived through that, I wouldn't believe this. I wouldn't believe that this was possible. And I kind of find it unbelievable that the NHS staff are not clued up on alcohol. Because surely if we all knew, we wouldn't do it. I just want people to be aware that you don't have to be a rock bottom drinker to actually have a problem with it, because alcohol is a drug and it's addictive. It's highly addictive. And so, anybody that drinks could be perceived to be having a problem with it. And I just wish more people would know. It's just, it's finding something and you want the world to know about it. You want everyone to feel as happy as you do. I want people to see pink clouds. I want people to feel what I feel because it's just amazing. I've had this gym habit for 30 years. It cracks me up. It really does, because I've had a propensity to be fat. I'm allowed to use that because I'm talking about myself. And I've done every diet known to man, I kid you not, and thought that the gym would be some miracle cure for my overdrinking and overeating. Well, guess what, folks? Abs are not made in the gym, they're made in the kitchen or your fridge or wherever you are storing your wine. It could be coincidence, but loads of people just recently have been saying to me, cool. How much weight have you lost? And I just smile, I stow a little bit. No, the truth of the matter is, I've got this lovely chap called Tony McLean. I have to get his surname correctly, otherwise he'll make me do legs more than once a week. He trains me twice a week on average, and my body, certainly since I've stopped drinking, has just changed. It's changed shape. And so people talk about stopping drinking and losing weight. Well, I'd already pretty much lost a shed load of weight anyway. So I tend not to get on the scales because it can be either mood lifting or depressing. But what I have started using is a tape measure, and I've lost 4 inches from rib cage area. All told now, I've lost 4.5 stone.
That's amazing.
But I'm not focused on the weight thing any longer because I'm quite happy where I am. I'm now focused on getting strong. And so I do weight training. And who'd have thought I'd have been doing deadlifts. I mean, come on. But I've got to share this with you before I forget. I thought I must remember to say this. At the back end of last year, I was walking the dogs at stupid o'clock in the morning. There was frost on the ground and it was dark. And I was listening to you, and it was a podcast, and you said about stepping out of your comfort zone. And I listened and I thought, right. So I signed up to a yoga class and I went to yoga the next day. And so I've really added to my fitness regime. So I try and get to the gym 4 times a week. Hands up, I haven't been to yoga for 3 weeks because I don't think it's for me. I am just not that bendy. And I can't excel at it. So the philosophy that goes hand in hand with yoga, I will carry on doing that. I will carry on with the meditation and all the good things. And I really like the bit right at the very end when you just lay there quietly. And I thought, like, you can't do 50 minutes just for the last 10 minutes, can you?
Yeah, that's true.
I might go back to it. We'll see. I pushed myself out of my comfort zone a little bit too far, but anyway, health is one of the huge benefits because I'm not pretending any longer. I'm going to the gym, and I'm seeing the results. And when your liver is being attacked by a toxic substance, it's going to concentrate on that and not all the other good stuff that your body is capable of. And I now think that I've given my liver free rein to help me on my journey of getting fit. So that a couple of my girlfriends have said, "Why are you doing it at your age? Why are you doing that? Why are you lifting weights?" And I said, "Because I'm safeguarding my body for the future. I don't want to be old and reliant on a walker or a stick. I want to be able to get off the toilet without a handrail."
Yeah, and
So
that's those squats, isn't it? And things like that.
it's squats,
You're building that strength. And also it helps, as far as I understand it, with things like bone density, and it's a really just a really great thing to be doing.
It's absolutely does help because obviously as we get older, especially for the ladies listening, we're prone to osteoporosis and what have you because our bone density is decreasing. So when I had my diagnosis, I had to go and have a DEXA scan. It's like a whole body scan where they have a look at your bones, and they're in good shape. And I'm pretty sure that's down to the work that I do, the resistance work that I do. You're younger than I am by a tad. But I remember when it was all about aerobics, jumping around on steps and feeling the burn, to burn the fat away, which we all know now is rubbish. Increasing your muscle density is far more important than hurting your knees, bouncing around.
Yeah.
So yes, that's health. I feel healthy, and as I say, I'm no longer faking it.
That's an amazing one. So, what about your third thing?
Okay, it's got to be gratitude. And I've, under my grateful heading, I suppose liberation goes back to freedom. I'm grateful for being cognizant now, for being much more aware. I'm grateful for the newfound confidence. Everybody thought I was a real, because of the job that I do, everyone thought I was just a kick-ass type woman, and it's true to a certain extent. I don't take nonsense from anybody, really. And so when I talk about confidence, I mean confidence in myself. It's silly things like traveling alone, getting on an aeroplane, hiring a car, confident that, shall I learn about this? Yes, you can do that. This new person that I'm making friends with, the new me, she's always been here. It's just that she's out of her prison, and I feel grateful to be so content with so many things. And lots of people, bemoan their lot. They seem to be in a permanent state of negativity. What being clear-headed has allowed me to do is to take joy in the slightest of things. And the saying about stopping and smelling the roses, I actually did that. I was out on a dog walk a couple of days ago, this great big rose in bloom, and I stuck my nose in it. Unfortunately, there wasn't a bee in there. Otherwise, I'd have copped an unfortunate one. But I thought, gosh, anybody watching me do this, and that woman is crazy. I'm finding joy. So back to the nature reserve when I was gawping at the flamingos in Spain. And I went on the longest boardwalk ever. Every turning, it just carried on and on and on. And it was quite a desolate area, really. Lots of white sand and sort of petrified trees and what have you. But I just kept stopping and marveling at the beauty of it. And I was talking to myself a little bit, saying, oh, this is just, oh, look at that, look at that, look at that. I'm talking to myself because I've got no one else to talk to. And I experienced something that I can only describe as close to euphoric. It was just, I can't believe, A, that I'm in another country, B, I'm on my Jack Jones. That's quite a novel experience for me. And I'm amongst such beauty. Whereas if you look back to the old me, would I have done that? I mean, it was about 35 degree heat. The sun was beating down, and there I was off on a yacht with my little bottle of water. I wouldn't have done that, would I? Bugger it, I'd have found a local bar and put my feet up and got sloshed. I wouldn't have been interested in doing that. So I'm really grateful that I've always appreciated beauty, but now I find comfort in really little things, the small stuff. Stuff that's on my doorstep, my woods, my dogs. And if I have a negative thought, and I don't want people to think that I'm fake happy, I'm not. I am, this is my default. I'm generally an up person. I know it's irritating for some people, but I feel joyful. I feel glee. Occasionally things get on my nerves. I mean, I do a reasonably stressful, people would think it was a stressful job. I deal with commercial recovery work. And so sometimes people swear at me. These business people, by the way, are swearing at me or being pretty mean. Once upon a time, I'd have just downed tools, turned everything off, finished work early, and poured myself a large G&T. In fact, my husband, when I walked in from the office, would say, oh dear, bad one, large one. Yes, please make it a large one. And that was my way of dealing with a stressful day. Self-medication, I think it's referred to. I'm grateful I no longer feel the need to do that. And I think I told you, Louisa, a little while ago, something happened to do with the doggies, and a couple of women were quite verbally abusive to me and intimidating. And by the time I got home, I was pretty shaken up. It was a Sunday afternoon. And I sat on our deck. And my husband said, oh, darling, shall I go over there? I said, absolutely not. And he said, okay, shall I pour you a drink? I went, absolutely. And of course, he meant zero alcohol, rosé, fizz, which I really like it. And it's not to replace it. I just like it, like I like cherry and soda. And I smiled because I thought the old me would have come home in a state of high anxiety, and I'd have poured myself a large drink to deal with the way I was feeling, just to numb the way I was feeling. And I no longer feel the need to do that in any circumstances. Do you want to
That's
hear?
amazing.
Yeah. So I'm grateful, and I'm also grateful. I'm looking at my savings number, which is standing at £1,352.
That's excellent. Where is
Yeah.
that, you'll be saying?
Well, I'll tell you where it is. I bought a designer handbag and shoes, a trip to Merthyr, some GHD curlers, some GHD straighteners, and that's what I'm being honest about. And I've got £320 left to spend. I'm
That's a really
grateful.
good idea, though. So you have actually earmarked that money, and you have actually said, look, that I'm going to spend things that I can say that is down to my sobriety.
Yeah. And I've probably lied about that figure. It's probably more, but then you can figure it out what I was spending on booze, and I'm not doing that. It's a little bit higher than that, I guess, because I haven't taken into account what I'd spend at a restaurant or what I would spend going out with whomever.
Yeah, it's almost higher than the figure we estimate.
The other thing everyone says about developing a sweet tooth. Okay. Yep, I am no different to everybody else. I have developed a sweet tooth. But I'm not going to say that that's a negative because it isn't. What I'm grateful for is that I no longer spend my calories on alcohol. And it really was. I've heard you refer, you'd rather cut down on what you were eating and you'd have that wine instead. And I was no different. But now I feel that because I'm not taking on board alcohol, I will have a chocolate fondant and hot chocolate sauce any day of the week if that's what I fancy. I'll order a cheese board and there will not be one moment of guilt or remorse about what I'm shoving in my cake hole, because I know that I was spending so many calories every day on booze. It's win-win-win all around.
And more freedom as well, freedom of a lack of overthinking then about what you're ordering and what you're eating.
Exactly right. And but the weird part is, have you noticed, it doesn't matter how full you are, you can always either get another chocolate in or you can always get another chip in.
Oh yeah, definitely.
I am quite mindful, but I don't feel, it's the guilt, it's the freedom from guilt and not, you know, having to allow in my calorie allowance for that alcohol intake. I mean, even when I was drinking, I would count my calories. I don't do that so much now. So it's a wonderful feeling, and long may it continue. And I've got no doubt that it will.
What would you do if you could go back to Diane 6 months ago and give her a piece of advice as to how to do this thing or what she was going to get out of it? What would you say?
I think I'd say, don't be scared. Don't be scared. You can do this. Anybody can do this. And your world is just going to open up. The colours are going to seem more vivid. Smell something nice and it's going to be wonderful. Your taste will improve. Everything. There is not one downside to the journey you're about to embark upon. So stop fretting about it. And I think I did it anyway, but I'd say make sure you've got your tools in place. You know, so my motto is, you know, fail to prepare, prepare to fail. So you make a decision and make it, you know, it's important. Have your reading material at hand. Get a reading list. If you feel you need somebody to hold your hand, then don't be frightened to do so, to ask for help. And a seminal thing for me was reaching out to you and talking to you. And speaking to somebody can help you identify why it is that you're doing what you're doing. And one of the things for me, you helped me identify this, was coping with Christmas Day. Our son wasn't at home, and that made me sad. There are lots of reasons why people drink, but it starts off as something innocuous. You're doing it because everybody does it. And then it can move into other territory where you're doing it because of the stress of a job. You're doing it because you're missing somebody, whatever. And so I'd say die. You know, it's time to retire. It's time to retire from your drinking career. You've proven it. You can do it. You're really good at making a twit of yourself when you're drunk. But now, you know, have a little bit of dignity as you get older. I'm working on that one, Louisa. I'm still an idiot. I still crack jokes inappropriate times. And I'm still a bit of a fool. But, you know, I amuse myself as much as I amused anybody else. So that's really important. And Diane, you'll really end up liking who you are after years and years and years and years of self-doubt, imposter syndrome, and thinking that I'm not worthy. But alcohol did that. Alcohol just chipped away at my self-esteem and chipped away at who I thought I was. And I think my husband and my son in particular have just gone, thank God. And knowing that I'm making those two boys bark at me, it's really, really important to me that they're happy. And that now that they know my keel is well and truly firm in the water, and I'm sailing through smooth water as opposed to a daily chop, they're happy. So, my world is just great.
It's just
Thank
so
you.
wonderful to see you so confident. And I don't just mean about alcohol now. It's quite interesting, isn't it, when we're an outgoing, confident, appearing confident lady, and people assume so much.
They do, and we have a game face, don't we? When you're out there, and nobody truly knows what's going on in the bit between our ears. But I'm really, really grateful to you for so many reasons. I think I said to you in a message when I was on the boardwalk, I don't think I've ever felt such gratitude to anybody for setting me on my right course and helping me navigate those choppy waters. Anyone would think I was a sailor, I'm really not. But putting me on the right trajectory and to find true calm, peace, health and tranquility in my life. It's just the noise is gone. I don't argue with myself. I no longer try to moderate because I don't need to. It's just, I've got more energy. So it's a privilege to have been invited along to chat because, you talk to people that have got a lot more time under their belt than I have. But maybe for somebody that's thinking about taking the first step, hopefully this is going to help and resonate with somebody. I hope so.
It really will. It's about talking to people at all different stages of sobriety, all different backgrounds, all different stories. It's been an absolute pleasure, as always. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me. And I'm sure it will help a lot of people.
I hope so. And well, thank you again for having me, and thank you for your ongoing support.
So I hope you enjoyed that episode. The links, as always, are in the show notes. You'll find links to my website where you can find out more about working with me if you'd like support, either on a one-off basis, just having a session every now and again to keep you on track. Or you can sign up to one of the packages where I support you for the first month or for the first 3 months. You'll also find a link to my audiobook that Diane so beautifully mentioned. Just head to louisaevans.com. And if I could ask a favour, if you're enjoying the Sober Rebel podcast, I wonder if you could take the time to please leave a review and a star rating on either Apple, Spotify, Google, wherever you listen. It really does help other people find it. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. Thank you so much again for listening, and I'll catch you next time.